Welcome back, Brewers fans, to a brand new episode of the Barrel Banter. I'm your host, Peter Goh, and David, boy, it's been a while. I was very excited to be back on the podcast with you, and just about seems like everything fell into place here these last couple weeks, so a lot to cover today, a lot to get through. I'm really excited for it, and I know you've been holding down the fort as well, but welcome back to our combined episode here.
Thank you. It has been a while, and it won't be so infrequent now with the season coming up pretty soon, or at least the ramp up to the season coming up. But it has been a little bit of a slow off season, but a lot has happened. More just haven't been able to get together for episodes over the past few weeks because, yes, quite a lot has happened, especially after there was about a 2-month stretch where we were grasping for news or for coverage. There was not really anything to talk about meaningfully in the off season for a big chunk of it. But now things are happening. We're getting ready for the season and a lot more to be excited about as a Brewers fan at this point in the year.
Yeah, it's funny to say it was a slow off season because on the one hand, it was a slow off season. And on the other hand, we had a blockbuster trade, of course. I would kind of call the Rhys Hoskins signing a blockbuster signing. I mean, was he the highest average annual value? I know it was a short-term deal.
Of any multi-year Brewers contract.
Yeah, okay. So still, I would say in Brewers world, it was sort of a blockbuster signing. So we had a lot go down. Of course, we've got to talk about a lot, all of that today. Corbin Burns trade, Rhys Hoskins signing, and then two minor signings, but actually still pretty relevant to the 2024 Brewers, that's for sure. Jacob Junis, the longtime journeyman pitcher, and then a bit of a surprising signing. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, David. Gary Sanchez seemed to kind of come out of nowhere. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts. How does Gary Sanchez's bat fit into the 2024 Brewers, especially after you see the Brewers, you know, drop the salary from Burns and pretty much pick it right back up with the two signings right after that. So all that and more certainly today on today's episode. And to your point, pitchers and catchers reporting this week. So spring training officially starting this week, which is really exciting to be back. It's Brewers baseball. We'll be coming back this month. There'll be a game this month, which is strange to say, and the offseason in some ways has gone pretty quickly. So position players reporting not too long after on the 19th, and again, we'll have you covered here. So again, trivia question. We have not had a trivia question in quite some time, so we've got to get back to our trivia question. David, which Brewers pitcher holds the franchise record for strikeouts as a rookie reliever in a season with 76? So that is today's trivia question. Again, which Brewers pitcher holds the franchise record for strikeouts as a rookie reliever in a season with 76? So that answer, as always, at the end of the podcast. David, who is today's random player of the day?
Today's random player of the day is Ben Ogilvie. He was a Brewer from 1978 to 86, started in left field on that 82 team. He ranks in the top 10 in franchise history in games, at-bats, runs, hits, total bases, home runs, RBIs, and walks. One of the best Brewers of all time in terms of offensive production. He's a Panama native, and he actually, in 1980, when he tied for the AL home run lead, became the first foreign-born player to win a home run title. He went to high school in New York, but grew up in Panama. He was known as Banana Man for eating lots of bananas. He had a number of nicknames. I know one of them was Spider-Man. He made some acrobatic plays in left field and was able to move his body in ways that most people couldn't. He was very, very skinny, but obviously powerful. He had good power at the plate. He coached in the Brewers organization after his career, and he also was known for his love of philosophy. He was a big reader. He attended 4 different colleges, something that Ben Ogilvie and I have in common, although his was because he kept getting traded, so he would enroll at different places. I think he went to UW-Madison when he was a Brewer, or Milwaukee, I forget, but he studied a lot, read a lot, and that was also in a day when players weren't really known for being very studious or very inquisitive. But Ogilvie was one of those players already back in his time in the 70s and 80s. Ben Ogilvie, today's random player of the day.
Yeah, the Banana Man makes me think of the Munenori Kawasaki interview. The bananas never cramp if you have not. That was a long time ago now, but Munenori Kawasaki, of course, a lot of memorable interviews, and that was a good one. Bananas never cramp, monkeys never cramp. You can check that out, enjoy that video on your own time. But I mentioned, of course, the big moves before we get to that, we got to mention just a couple minor transactions. Brewers trading Ethan Small to San Francisco for cash consideration. So that that ends the Ethan Small era in Milwaukee. Another unfortunate first round pick ending for the Brewers. We could go on more about that at a future point. But Brewers also DFAing Clayton Andrews, the short left-handed pitcher that you may remember, part of the 2023 squad. So let's do it, David. We got to go right into the Corbin Burnes trade. It was really the biggest trade that really all of baseball had been talking about in the offseason. There was speculation. It was on, it was off, it was on, it was off. Brewers were interested in trading Burnes. Then they weren't. Then they signed Rhys Hoskins. It seems like, okay, the Brewers are gonna compete for 2024 and see where things lie. I think we all knew Burnes was still in the back of their minds. So we were thinking, okay, maybe they're going to wait till the deadline. And now they did not. Corbin Burnes, of course, being sent to Baltimore for infield prospect Joey Ortiz, left-handed pitching prospect, if you want to, I guess, call him still a prospect, technically, DL Hall, and the number 34 pick in the 2024 draft. So a lot to break down here, David. First, initial thoughts on the Corbin Burnes trade. I know you shared much of that on the last episode. So certainly if you haven't had a chance, go listen to David's analysis of the trade. But for those that hadn't had a chance to listen, David, just to sum it up, what was your first reaction to the Corbin Burnes trade?
I was surprised it happened. I wasn't expecting it to happen at this time in the offseason, mostly based on what I'd heard. I'd heard that Mark Attanasio didn't want to trade Burnes, and that was the real holdup. This offseason was that Attanasio didn't want to be perceived as cheap. He didn't want to move one of his good players, especially after the fallout of the Hader trade, which, granted, was under much different circumstances, being a midseason trade with a first-place team. But that was the real holdup. We're pretty close to spring training. Now, I did expect that if Burnes was going to be traded, it was going to be after Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery signed, and neither has signed yet. But we're also getting pretty late in the offseason. So it just feels less likely at this time already in February. So my first reaction was that I was surprised. I wasn't expecting it. As far as the trade itself, I thought it was pretty straight up for a return. It wasn't something that wowed me, the return they got, DL Hall, Joey Ortiz, and the number 34 overall pick. But it also was a return that I thought was reasonable. I think if Ortiz and Hall play up to their expectations, that long-term the Brewers will get more value out of Hall and Ortiz in the pick than the Orioles get out of Burnes for 1 year. But of course, Burnes is a known commodity. Burnes is someone who's probably the second best pitcher in baseball, certainly top 5 or 10, if not. So to be able to trade for a pitcher like that is not something you have the opportunity to have every day. So the Orioles took advantage of that, took advantage of their deep farm system, made a whole lot of sense for the Orioles, but also I think made sense for the Brewers, especially if you're trying to capitalize on the young core you have in the 2025 through 30 range of trying to maximize that competitive window.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the start of the offseason you had said if you had to, you know, without knowing what the return would be, you'd likely be in favor of trading Burnes. It was, I think, really interesting to see Brewers fans at the start of the offseason. Like, I think the majority of fans actually, I don't know if I want to say wanted to, but at least were open to the idea of trading Burnes for the right package. And maybe the expectations were a little high, because I know that at least initially when the trade was announced, it seemed like Brewers fans thought the Brewers got shortchanged. I think the first like 25 comments I saw on X on the initial tweet were about how the Brewers were getting, you know, how the Orioles stole the trade. And I don't necessarily think that they did. I think the trade return could have been a little bit better, but I think they got two really good prospects in it. And of course the number 34 pick essentially being similar to that compensation pick the Brewers would have gotten had they held on to Burnes for the year. So I think I'm really interested in the two prospects, Joey Ortiz, DL Hall. I think especially DL Hall has a lot of upside as a left-handed arm that the Brewers, I think, need in the bullpen or in the rotation. We saw the Brewers' depth really get thinned out in that starting rotation after they dealt Adrian Houser and Corbin Burnes. Of course, they did address that some with Jacob Junis, but that doesn't quite fill the void that Adrian Houser and especially Corbin Burnes leaves. Between Ortiz and Hall, is one of those guys a player that you're more intrigued by in the return for the Brewers?
Ortiz is a safer bet to turn out. Hall is the higher upside play. So I would say I'm more excited about Hall. but I think there's a better chance that Ortiz becomes a good big leaguer.
And of course, Joey Ortiz, a Packer fan, that's probably most important thing to know about his scouting report. But Joey Ortiz is big league ready, a plus defender at shortstop. I know you mentioned this on the last episode. Definitely known for his defense, which as a shortstop, there's a lot of value to be had. And there's not as though he doesn't have a bat either. Good gap to gap power, and a guy who also has pretty good contact abilities. He had 15 games in the big leagues in 2023. He hit .212. I don't know how much weight really want to put in. Yeah, in 15 games, but slash .321, .378, .507 in AAA last year. According to MLB Pipeline, the number 63 overall prospect and 25 years old. So, of course, we all know the potential of a Willy Adames trade. Of course, he would slot in well. He'd be a guy who could, of course, get everyday at-bats this year if the Brewers decided to do that either before the year or partway through the year. So that there's, I think, that obvious fit. But let's assume the Brewers do keep Willy Adames, I mean, for now, or at least for the whole year. Do you see Ortiz as the Brewers starting third baseman breaking camp?
I think so, because I think Ortiz has a leg up on Black being maybe a little bit more polished. Black has about half a season under his belt in AAA, not quite a half season. So Ortiz has spent more than a full season in AAA, including some time in the big leagues. I think they would give him the leg up there at third base and break him in that way if Adames is playing short every day. The wild card is with Terang, because I'm not exactly sure what the Brewers' plans are with Terang. He had that very rough rookie season offensively last year. So even though the glove is certainly there and more than MLB ready, I mean, top five glove at second base right now in the major leagues. But is he a good enough hitter for it to justify, for the glove to justify the offensive numbers? I'm not quite sure right now. Now, I'm not saying you give up on Bryce Terang right now, but maybe Terang starts in AAA, see if you can work through some things. And then you have Ortiz play second and Black play third. To me, Black and Ortiz are the better major league players right now than Bryce Terang is. And we're kind of assuming Terang is going to start at second, but I don't think that's necessarily a given. Or the Brewers could choose to have Terang be a backup, though I think that's probably not likely. I think either way, though, regardless of what combination of young infielders they choose to go with, I do think Ortiz is the most likely to start in the majors and the most likely to be a starter in the lineup every day. And I think he deserves that. I think he's the one that's probably the most ready for it and the one that should get at bats.
He's got to be really excited. I mean, granted, you know, he's been developed by the Orioles since being a fourth round pick by the organization, but he's got to be excited to be going to the Brewers franchise. It seems like a good fit for him in that the Brewers are not only they're going to compete this year, but he doesn't have quite the log jam he has in Baltimore that he experienced last year and was likely to continue this year. So there's more opportunity, but he's not going to, like, you know, I think of like Christian Yelich in 2013 with the Miami Marlins. He's not going to that team either, where there's a bright future ahead for the Brewers with the current set of prospects and current set of players already on the team. So it seems like a really good fit for him. I think him as a player, I think he's got to be really excited about going into it. Brings an additional competition, like you said, for Tyler Black, and we'll see how that infield does get sorted out. But let's transition into DL Hall. You mentioned he's the higher upside guy. He was the first round pick by the Orioles back in 2017 out of a high school in Georgia. He's had a couple of injuries throughout his minor league career, but certainly the stuff is there. 80 grade fastball. There's of course only two players with an 80 grade fastball in all of minor leagues. Of course, DL Hall and Jacob Mizorowski, both being part of the Brewers organization. Slider is really good. Changeup has gotten better. Of course, the developing changeup, right? That's always the tertiary pitch. Yeah. Always got to have the developing changeup, but he's been in the big leagues 2022, 2023 as a reliever. It sounds like when the Brewers have talked to him, they want him to slot in the rotation, at least to start with. He wants to do the same. But what do you think about DL Hall? I think it's safe to say that he is going to be starting the rotation, but I guess would you confirm that? And do you think he stays there long-term?
Well, I can't confirm that with inside knowledge, but I would say that it is likely that he will start in the rotation. If you think about the pitchers they have, of course, Burns is gone now. They did sign Junis, who is I would say, a better starting pitcher than DL Hall is. But that's Freddie Peralta, Wade Miley, Jake Junis. Then you've got some sort of combination of Colin Ray, DL Hall, Robert Gasser, Joe Ross, maybe Aaron Ashby if healthy. So they're kind of just a combination of guys that I think are all at a similar level. I'm not super optimistic about Colin Ray, especially if you go in expecting him to make 30 starts. DL Hall, I think, will definitely need to take his lumps in the rotation. So I wouldn't expect DL Hall to go in and be a two-starter right away. But I also think that it's valuable for him to get that experience in the rotation and figure things out. He spent some time in a big league bullpen before, had quite a bit of success last year doing that, both in the regular season and in the playoffs. Went 3 1/3, 6 strikeouts, no runs against the Rangers in the ALDS. So it's not as if he's a fully developed pitcher at the major league level in the bullpen, but I do think the next step is for him to be a starter, and he's already 25 years old. So he's kind of at the point that you want to figure out, okay, is this somebody who can start for us long-term? And right now, especially with the Brewers being maybe in a bit of a transition year, not a rebuild, definitely not going to call it that, but a year where maybe the expectations aren't quite as high, there's some more openings in the rotation, I think now is the time to see if Hall can be a starter long-term. And if he's not, that's fine. I think Hall could be a really good reliever, multi-inning reliever long-term. But I think it's worth giving him a shot to start. And I think the Brewers are going to do that. He seemed to make that clear when he was interviewed recently, that the Brewers want him to start and are going to give him the opportunity to start.
Yeah, seems to make a lot of sense. Certainly the concerns with the health. He's never thrown over 100 innings in a season across his career. So we haven't really seen that durability and the ability to pitch for a long time. So we'll see if that's able to come to fruition this year. And I don't know, we could maybe see him slot into more of that hybrid Josh Hader 2018 role. Certainly a guy that seems like it could play into that based off of his stuff. And I think certainly will be a big part of the Brewers here over the next couple of years. Final question here on the Burns trade. You said it's not necessarily as though the Brewers are rebuilding or raising a white flag for the 2024 season, but you think about Rhys Hoskins getting signed to the Brewers and then they turn around and trade Corbin Burns. Like, where do you think this trade puts the Brewers at now going into the 2024 season? It's hard to say because, are they competing? Are they playing for 2025 and 26? Where do you see that in terms of direction for this year?
I call them a tweener going into 2024. They're not a bad team. They're not even like a Pirates who are maybe on the rise, but definitely not there in terms of being competitive in even a weak NL Central. But they're also not somebody that I would expect to make the playoffs going into the year. They're the heavy hitters, obviously the Dodgers, but even teams like the Phillies, who are a clear playoff team. Arizona's definitely expected to make the postseason going into the year. The NL Central has a lot of what I would call the tweeners, where they're realistically four teams that could win the division this year: Cardinals, Reds, Cubs, and Brewers. I think part of what dictates what happens in the Central is what happens with the Cubs. The Cubs could still spend money between now and opening day. Is Craig Counsell going to work his magic in Chicago, or was that something that he'll leave behind in Milwaukee? We'll see in 2024, and we'll see how the pitching holds up, and the Cubs still have a number of holes. The Cardinals, are they going to bounce back? Are their young players going to take a step forward? That's a big question for 2024. The Reds, are they going to go out and get a pitcher? How are their younger pitchers going to continue to improve in 2024? So those are all questions among the NL Central teams that we'll discuss further in a later episode as we preview the division. But the Brewers are kind of right in that mix where there are question marks, especially with the pitching, with the offense. There are still some question marks, even though it is improved, I think, going into 2024 versus 23. But I think the Brewers realistically right now are more of an 82-83 win team. But also, if things go well with the young players, they realistically could win 92 games and win the division. There are just a lot of things up in the air, a lot of factors where things could go right, things could go wrong. I think more so this year than there have been in previous years.
It's hard to think of a 90-win team with a rotation of, Peralta, Miley, Junis, Colin Ray, DL Hall. I mean, I guess it's possible. You got Gasser, Ashby. You got some youth in the mix that could, have some immediate impact. But it's hard. I'd say it's hard to imagine. I'd say for me, it's hard to imagine a 90 plus win team with that rotation, at least going into the year.
It is hard to imagine, but the 2018 Brewers, which I know other people have been bringing up lately. They're most frequently used starters that year: Chacin, Chase Anderson, Junior Guerra, Brent Suter, Wade Miley, Freddy Peralta, Zach Davies. That's everyone who made double digit starts. Those aren't exactly names that jump off the page. Their rotation actually might even be, I would say probably pretty similar to what that was. And the bullpen is very, very good right now. And it was in 2018 too. Is it as good? I don't know if it's quite as good, but it's at least close. So
yeah,
I certainly could see it. Again, I'm not projecting 90 wins, but I think it's possible. And the Burns trade does leave the Brewers in a little bit of that in-between spot where they're definitely someone who can contend, but are they somebody who's a favorite? No.
Yeah. I think you gave the final grade of the trade a C+. I think I'd probably give a similar grade, maybe C, but I think it's a solid trade. I actually do like the pairing of Ortiz and Hall in the sense that you've got a lower floor guy in Ortiz, who hopefully is going to be a solid guy for the Brewers for several years to come, and Hall, who has a little bit more upside. So it'll be exciting to see. Of course, Brewers now the most top 100 prospects of any team in all of baseball as well after the trade. So they're certainly poised for success. Like I said, it's got to be an interesting turn of events for Rhys Hoskins, of course, signing the deal with the Brewers. He spent six seasons with the Phillies. He was drafted by the Phillies in 2014, missed 2023 with an ACL tear. So signed a two-year deal with the Brewers with the opt-out after 1 year. He's been a really solid bat, career 846 OPS, 126 weighted runs created plus. And I think, I wouldn't say most importantly, but he hits left-handed pitchers really well. And we all know the Brewers, they've struggled against left-handed pitchers. So this just seemed like a perfect fit for the Brewers, especially before the Burns trade, because he's not necessarily the guy who's going to be here for 5 or 6 years. But he's a guy who really, really fits well for the Brewers after the loss of Carlos Santana. What are your thoughts on the Rhys Hoskins deal?
Yeah, I think in addition to the loss of Santana, who of course played first base where Hoskins will be playing, he also fills in a little bit offensively for the loss of Mark Canha, who I know was only there. I mean, Santana and Canha were only there for 2 months, but nobody really has been talking about the Canha loss, and Canha was their best hitter down the stretch. So in some ways, he makes up for him hitting lefties also, which, believe it or not, the Brewers actually were better against left-handed pitching last year than right-handed pitching, which I found hard to believe. I found it very hard to believe. They targeted right-handed hitters who hit lefties well at the deadline, and that's what made that happen. But you have noticed the Brewers targeting those kinds of hitters this offseason. I do like the Hoskins move a lot. I thought the fit was just too obvious from the get-go to not make that move. He was someone who was clearly within the Brewers' price range, even if they may have had to pay up a little bit to get him, about $17 million a year. And I think it's about 15, I think it's 15 and a half the first year, and then $19.5 million player option for the second. So there's a decent chance, I guess kind of 50-50, that he stays or he exercises the opt-out. But having Hoskins there as pretty much the everyday first baseman is, I think, much needed. They lacked, I think, not only did they struggle against lefties at times, but power was their big issue, I would say, as a whole offensively last year. And he's somebody who averaged 36 home runs per 162 when he was in Philadelphia. So he's somebody who can hit home runs. We've seen him hit home runs both in the playoffs on the national stage, but also against the Brewers. We've seen him hit very well against the Brewers. And the fit just, it seemed too clear to not make that move. And so signing somebody like Hoskins, who isn't going to be somebody who's he's not a superstar. He's not somebody who you're going to give a huge contract to, but he's a known commodity, which I was saying with the Brewers trading Burns, although Burns is a superstar. But Hoskins is a known commodity. He's a good player. I think Derek Van Riper was saying this when I was talking with him a couple weeks ago, and I would agree with it. Players who don't have a lot of defensive value, I think in today's day and age, actually tend to get undervalued a little bit, because do you really need a whole lot of defense out of first base? Not really. So you put somebody in that spot who can mash, who can hit for power, and that really deepens your lineup. Somebody you can put in the middle of the order, and you expect him to go for 30 and 100. And the Brewers really lacked that last year. So adding Hoskins, I think, is a great fit. And even in light of the Burns move, I think having someone like Hoskins there does push them from maybe a, okay, this is really probably not a contending team, to, okay, I could see this team contending, because Hoskins is a good player and one of their biggest free agent signings they've made in recent years.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if the Burns trade doesn't happen, I don't know. My opinion, I think I have the Brewers winning the Central if the Burns trade doesn't happen after the Hoskins signing, maybe if you want to throw Junis in there, because they still did need some additional starting pitching depth, still do at this point, I think. But would you have said the Brewers were your favorites for the NL Central? I guess we can put aside what national media would have said or Fangraphs would have said, because of course they wouldn't have had the Brewers first. But would you have put the Brewers as your predicted number one spot prior to the Burns trade?
Definitely, yeah. I think now, like now, I wouldn't, but I don't know that there's a clear better option. Let's take a look at Fangraphs. Fangraphs has, well, okay. Guess who do you think the Fangraphs
Cardinals
has?
Probably projected to win 100 games.
Yeah. Yeah, they have the Cardinals projected to win at 83, which Fangraphs has always has a very conservative projections, but they have Cardinals 83, Cubs and Brewers at 81, Reds at 80, and Pirates at 77. So I mean, all separated by six games.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really see the Pirates winning the division this year, but the projections are also very, like, the projections are probably the worst at young players. The Brewers have the most young players, but the Cardinals have young players too.
Reds.
The Cubs do. The Reds do. So that's an area where I think projecting the NL Central is really difficult right now. I think this might be as closely contested of a division going in that we've seen, not in the traditional way of like two teams that are really close, but like everybody is kind of right there, and a bunch of teams that realistically could win the division, but also teams that if things go wrong, they could win 72 games.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. It's interesting. And that's what was the Brewers put the Brewers in a challenging spot, I think, because you keep Burns going in, I think, as the favorite to win the division. I mean, it's not a small feat to win a division. So there is certainly, I think that was certainly on their minds too. The Brewers had a chance in a relatively, what I would call a relatively weak division, just for the lack of star power. There's no one team, like you said. Granted, we don't have a team that's going to win 60 games, but it's a relatively weak division, has been for several years now, I think. So it's tough to give up Burns in a season where you know probably keeping him gives you the best chance to win the division, but it gives the Brewers almost certainly a better chance to win the World Series, of course, in the next 5 years. So I don't know. I think the Hoskins signing is a little bit, it just feels strange after the before with now the Burns trade happening, but I think it does still, we have to look at it as it's not either, we're not either contending or we're rebuilding. And I think that's, as fans, we've gotten so far into that where it's like we're one or the other. And I think it's, the Brewers are showing it's okay to be both. And the sort of the output of the first half may depend on which direction they go. And I think it's, I would say it's more likely the Brewers hold on to Adames at this point than they trade him. That's just my thought. Do you think that if you had to say one or the other on that?
I would agree with that, especially because of what you were saying. It's not either that they're contending or rebuilding, which, one, they built an incredible farm system while competing. So yeah. I think that maybe debunks the rebuilding myth that you have to be bad to build a farm system. But also, I think, one, it's also late in the offseason. But I think the Brewers, yeah, are maybe, they're not eager to move Adames, even if they're willing to. So I don't know that they're going to at this point.
Yeah. I think I would agree as well. So let's move on to the two smaller signings. First, Jacob Junis. Junis spent 5 years with Kansas City and then two with the Giants, primarily as a starter with Kansas City and a swingman over in San Francisco. Just short of 200 innings and about an ERA around 4.2 with San Francisco. Seems like a guy, I don't know, feels a little bit like an Adrian Hauser replacement. Maybe a little bit more upside. I'm not totally sure exactly what your thoughts are on that. Is that a good comparison? Would you say Junis sort of fits the gap of Adrian Hauser?
In terms of taking his spot, to some extent, yes. I think Junis is actually better than Adrian Hauser. He's someone who doesn't have as much starting experience as him, but he's got higher upside. had 10 Ks per nine last year while working mostly out of the pen, but in multiple innings, which was a career high for him. He's a sinker slider changeup guy, but he really has been consistently upping his slider usage in recent years through 62% sliders in 2023 while working in multiple innings, which is an incredibly high rate. But he was very good while doing that. He had a sub four ERA, which was a first for him in a bigger role and or in a big enough sample size for it to actually matter. And he's someone that StatCast really likes, ranked in the 60th percentile in whiff rate, so swing and miss percentage, 73rd percentile in strikeout rate, 87th percentile in walk rate, 75th percentile in hard hit rate, and 51st percentile in ground ball rate. So you combine all those things, had the makings of somebody who the Brewers saw maybe they could get at a below market level rate, because Junis is somebody that was that doesn't have the same starter's pedigree as some of the guys on the market. But if they could come in and strike and get him and hopefully get maybe his best year out of him, which I think may just happen knowing the Brewers and how adept they are at identifying pitching, I think this could turn out to be a really good signing. He also outperformed his fielding independent pitching showed that he underperformed over the past 2 years. 3.65 in 2022, 3.74 last year, while running ERA is a little bit higher than that. So that could be an indication of maybe some better results coming in 2024. Not a move that's going to move the needle significantly, but one that I think is much needed, especially we've talked about how the rotation is thin, and the Brewers seem to do really well with these kind of 3-4 starter types that they sign, that maybe they're 5 or 6 starters when they sign them, and they turn them into guys who end up going 5 innings a start. The Gio Gonzalez 5 innings, 2 runs customary start that we became known to seeing. I think that might be someone that Jake Junis is like in terms of output in 2024, albeit somebody who maybe strikes out a few more guys and, of course, is a right-handed pitcher. More so just the results could be like that. So 1 year, $7 million, I think definitely a move that I was glad to see the Brewers make.
2018 was a fun year for Brewers baseball. So I think if we had a 2018-esque season this year, we'd be pretty happy with it. That was a lot of fun that year. And yeah, I think the roster is sort of shaping up to be similar to that team. MVP Yelich would be great too, if we could ask for that. But an interesting addition also actually at the catcher position, thinking back to the Yasmani Grandal addition, not to the same pedigree, but also a power hitting catcher, Gary Sanchez, 2-time All-Star, of course, former Yankees prospect and catcher, had a part-time role with the Padres last year, the .217 batting average, .288 on base with a .492 slugging. Of course, the power's there. I did, of course, see the tweets out there, Brewers picking up their latest and their biggest defensive catching project. I'm not sure that's actually going to come to fruition, of course, with William Contreras. We know we've got Caro coming up too, but probably slots more into the DH role. But where does he really slot into? Gary Sanchez, a 1-year, $7 million deal that just seemed sort of out of the blue and really, frankly, not like the Brewers to make this signing, but I'm interested by it. So how does Gary Sanchez fit in? Do you see sort of how he fits into the 24 Brewers roster?
Yeah, it's a funny signing. I had kind of forgotten about Gary Sanchez too. I've been sick this week and I woke up from a nap and saw Brewers signed Gary Sanchez, and I was wondering if it was still part of my dream that I was having, but it wasn't. They signed him for 1 year, $7 million, same thing as Junis, and he's someone that had an interesting year last year. Try to cover up the batting average and the on-base percentage and just look at the slugging there. 492, of course, an excellent mark, most notably against lefties, as we seem to bring up quite often on this show. Hit .267, .304, .680 against lefties, 9 home runs and 79 plate appearances. So the power especially was there against lefties, has consistently hit lefties better than righties, and that's going to be a big role for Gary Sanchez. He's going to slot in as the Brewers' backup catcher, I think. I don't think they're going to keep 3 catchers with Eric Haas, and I think Sanchez will maybe start 1 out of every 5 games behind the plate, and then they'll have him DH against lefties pretty much every time out, and that's going to be where Sanchez plays. So he'll probably wind up playing a good 75 to 100 games with the Brewers. I don't see him being in a full-time role unless Contreras goes down. But I do see him being someone who plays a meaningful role. And again, I don't think he moves the needle by four wins or anything like that. But I do think he does make this I think he makes this team better, at least to some extent. And we could see the same improvements defensively. Sanchez had this horrible reputation as a defender because he came up before he was ready defensively, came up in New York, which never goes well for him. So even as good as he was offensively, especially in his rookie year, he just wasn't there defensively and got crucified by the New York media, by Yankees Twitter. And he has improved since then. He was about average to slightly above in terms of framing and is pretty good actually at catching base stealers. But blocking is where he's the worst in terms of defense. And the Brewers actually did improve Contreras's blocking. He was minus one run in 2022, plus seven in 2023. The Brewers could maybe do the same thing for Sanchez. He was minus a few runs last year with blocking and has been consistently. So if they are going to improve his defense, I think it's going to come via the blocking. And there's some appeal that the Brewers have turning catchers into very good defenders, that maybe that's what Sanchez is looking for, is he wants to become even better as a defensive catcher. That's why he signed with the Brewers to improve in that area. It's a signing that I thought is a little weird. Was it necessary? Probably not. But I also won't complain because I think he does make the Brewers better.
Yeah, well, and we haven't seen a signing like this. I mean, I talked about how the Hoskins signing is sort of out of the ordinary, but the Brewers didn't have like a gaping hole, and they shelled out, you know, $7 million for a pretty good option. And yeah, maybe Sanchez did want to come to Milwaukee because he is a guy where if he can get more regular at bats, but maybe even more importantly, also a better defense. I mean, if he could become a, you know, closer to an average defensive catcher, and you know, put up the numbers he does offensively, I mean, that's a starting catcher somewhere if he can do that. So it could be something where he looks at it as an opportunity to come get better for a year with the Brewers and go maybe sign a 2-3 year deal with somebody for, you know, $25 million if he can really put things together defensively and, you know, maybe even shore up a little bit offensively. We all know he's going to be a power bat. And I think that a lot of teams would be okay with that as long as the defense was there. So yeah, I think he slots behind Contreras at the catcher position, certainly increases the depth a lot. And you know, you've got Caro. And I mean, it's not typical to go through a season and not have your starting catcher go on the IL at some point either. So definitely deepens the Brewers, Contreras and Sanchez behind the dish then most likely. And as we mentioned earlier, Hoskins, of course, at first, Adames at short, and then you've got Turang, Ortiz and Black, probably two of those three guys nabbing the starting roles when they break camp. And then of course, our five outfielders in Yelich, Churio, Frelick, Weimer, Mitchell. And so it leaves Sanchez on the bench, you know, with Jake Bowers, probably either Owen Miller or Andrew Monasterio. And you think about a guy off the bench too. I mean, a guy who can really hit lefties well, that's of course valuable off the bench and with some pop. Always got to love the Russell Branyan pinch hit position. I always love that. When you need the home run, you turn to the Gary Sanchez or the Russell Branyan on the bench. So I like having a guy like that on the bench as well. So I think he also gets, the Brewers are a lot better off the bench as well if he's not starting, and you know, Contreras is catching, and they've got somebody else in the DH role. So I think, like you said, makes the Brewers better, and very quickly the Brewers filled the Burns salary essentially within a couple of days of trading Burns and shedding the roughly $15 million in salaries. They turn around and sign Junis and Sanchez for about $14 million and pretty much replace that salary quickly, which again also seemed a little bit, you know, didn't seem to fit Brewers mold of the Brewers being on the cheap side. I don't know how much of that is, you know, how much of that is, I guess, reality, and how much of that is, of course, always talked about. But were you surprised to see the Brewers fill that salary so quickly between Junis and Sanchez?
As quickly as it was, yes. Although it seemed like kind of a classic Brewers move where you trade the piece that's going to hit free agency in the near future. You get pieces in return for it, and then you go out and spend that money in free agency. So you kind of serve two purposes by making the trade. So that's why I think the trade brings a lot of intrigue. And well, it is sad that Corbin Burns will no longer be pitching for the Brewers. Definitely. I don't want to ignore that because I'm sad about that. I enjoy watching Burns, and it's a big loss. They also yeah, they brought in Ortiz, they brought in Hall, they get that pick. And then they also signed Junis and Sanchez, who they probably wouldn't have signed otherwise. And will Junis and Sanchez account for 3 wins between the two of them? I think that's maybe a reasonable estimate. Ortiz and Hall maybe will account for another 2 wins. Burns, maybe you could have expected 4 from him. So now it's not quite even roster spots. One 4-win player is better than having 4 players account for 5. But then we look at the long term of having Ortiz and Hall long term. So that's where the trade makes a lot of sense. But it is still difficult to stomach when trading Burns, especially in a year where the division is wide open. And I do think the Brewers would have been the favorites had they kept Burns. Now, maybe not as much, but also I think they may be better positioned to win a World Series over the next 5-6 years, having one of the best farm systems. A couple places, ESPN and The Athletic, both rank them as the second best farm system in all of baseball. And that's even with a number of graduations recently from Sal Frelick, Joey Weimer, and Garrett Mitchell. So the Brewers are positioned well to be a World Series contender over the next couple of years, better than they were before the Burns trade, which is the appeal of trading Burns. And we'll see how things shake out in 2024, but I still think that they could contend, even if they might not be as good of a place as they were a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we do. I think we do gloss over the fact that we just lost a former Cy Young winner in Corbin Burns because it was so long awaited that we expected it. It wasn't sudden, or it was sudden, but not completely unexpected. So we sort of were already braced ourselves for that fact. And yeah, I mean, he's been a part of the Brewers for the six 6 years. He's really been here for the entire era of competitive Brewers baseball over this last 6 years, and was obviously a huge part of that. So he'll certainly be missed, both for his performance and just part of the Brewers team and as a fan of the Brewers. So let's close up today here with our trivia question. Which Brewers pitcher holds the franchise record for strikeouts as a rookie reliever in a season with 76?
This is a tough one because as I was thinking about it, thought Devin Williams, of course, had that tremendous rookie year, but that was in 2020, shortened season through 27 innings. I think he had 54 Ks. Hader in 2017, he pitched maybe 30 innings, but I don't think he had that many
47
strikeouts.
47 innings.
Oh, he threw 47 innings. 47. So what would that be? 75 times 9 divided by, okay, my math is not that good. I
Everybody
thought maybe I
could
get
math.
That one. No.
Yeah, right.
Hater's too obvious of an answer. I'm going to go with John Axford.
Love to see it. I knew I could trust in you to get that one. John Axford
actually,
is the correct
2010
answer.
John Axford.
2010 John Axford, 76 strikeouts.
Let's go.
In his rookie campaign. And you're right. Hater did not do it. Would have been 68. So he was right there. 68 Ks. And I was thinking about some of the more recent guys in the bullpen too. You know, Piamps had a great year last year, but of course he wasn't a rookie, just the first year with the Brewers. He had 77 Ks, ironically, last year at the Brewers. Peguero, not a rookie, nor did he have that many strikeouts either. But 2010, John Axford, your answer to the most strikeouts in a single season by a rookie reliever.
Proud of myself for that one. Because Axford, I never think of him as a rookie. Like, he wasn't a prospect. He just kind of came up, and
yeah,
I couldn't remember. I was pretty sure he maintained his rookie eligibility in 2010 because I think he came up in 2009. But I'm almost positive according to your trivia question, he did. So
what was it that you said in Devin Williams in 2020? What would you say?
54 Ks in 27 innings, I think.
27 innings, 53 Ks.
Oh, 53
Ks. 53. Man. Yeah, not even close. Yeah. For those of you listening at home, David does not have the cheat sheet in front of him either. So that was just off the cuff. Those are the things that David has off the top of his head. 27 innings, a little off. 53 strikeouts. And
yeah, Devin I don't. Williams, wait, was it a 0.54 ERA? Is that what I was thinking? No, 0.33.
0.33, you got it. 0.33 ERA.
I don't even try to remember these things. I just.
But how many wild pitches did he have in 2020?
Oh, 3.
Yep.
Really?
All right.
I think
we should end
on 8-1 last year. By the way,
8-1,
8-3, 8-3.
Now it just sounds like you're making stuff up. Let's see. 8-3 last year.
Yeah,
three,
which career shocked me.
Yeah. Career win loss 26-10.
I was going to say, I think he has 27.
All right. So don't do any trivia questions involving Devin Williams, because apparently David's going to get them all.
Apparently.
Apparently. So, yes. But we're excited. Of course, spring training starting this week for pitchers and catchers, position players right around the corner, and a Brewers baseball game happening, taking place this month in Arizona as spring training begins. We're excited. This is a fun time as the season revs up. We've appreciated all of you joining the ride in the off season. We've enjoyed the podcast continuing to grow. We've increased our listenership over the off season and brought on some really fun guests as well. If you have been tuning out the Brewers during the off season, go back, listen to a couple of the old episodes over the off season. David mentioned Derek Van Riper from The Athletic. We had Mike Guerrero, who of course was the manager of the 2023 Biloxi team that involved Jock Centurio and Mizorowski. He's transitioning out of the role this year, but was the manager of that team last year. He had a lot to say about those guys, including Tyler Black and Vinny Rotino, a couple other really great guests that we had over the offseason. So go check those episodes out. Again, if you want to dive deeper into the Corbin Burnes trade, David did record a solo episode last week on that as well. And you can find David over at the Brewer Fanatic as well, where he's writing and also publishing videos for them. So check us out. Like I said, we'll be back more often on the podcast now as the season gears up. And we're always over on X, formerly known as Twitter, as well. So with that, this is Peter Goh and David Goh signing off. As always, go Brewers.